Hello, everybody. We are in Webster University, Geneva. Today is 19 June 2018, and I'm Professor Ruben Njikyan, lecturer in energy, which is one of the courses which I am teaching. I'm very honored today to have as a guest Mr. William Zimmern of British Petroleum, who is a lead economist, energy transitions of BP Economics Group, producing annual statistical review of world energy, a very famous publication, and I used to be a student of that publication when I was writing my PhD. Today we have an event where we will discuss the state and the future of energy, where William will be our keynote speaker, and we will have also representatives from Gunvor and Lundin Petroleum as panelists in our event. But before the event, we decided to make a podcast to summarize main findings of William's keynote presentation and disseminate it among interested public. So, I would ask a few questions, William, if you don't mind, and then we will conclude. Is it okay with you?
Very good, yes.
Okay. So, my first question is about your venerable statistical review, which is a highly respected source of statistical information and analysis. That implies rigorous work with statistical and other data. I understand that you are working on that in cooperation with Heriot Watt University. So my question is, how are you getting the statistical data? After publication by national authorities, how actively you are using JODI? What are the sources of trade data? National Customs Administration or some other? And also an important part of this question would be, are you using private industry data, capturing, for example, on the state of ship movements, etc.? Please.
Great. Firstly, Ruben, thank you very much for the invitation to be here today. It's a great honour to be at Webster, and I'm looking forward to the event. Just in terms of the data, it really does vary. So we have a fantastic team at Heriot Watt in Edinburgh, and they spend a long time looking at lots of different sources to try and find the most appropriate source for any of the energy data. I mean, we have levels of we have gradations of sources, in the sense that if it comes directly from the statistical department of a country, you know, we feel that's sort of that's worth more than if it comes from a third party, say like JODI. If we don't have any information, we have to try and interpolate or try and establish exactly what the right numbers or the answer is. There we can use private sector sources. So, for example, say we know that there's a very big hydro producer in that country. We may go to the accounts of that hydro producer to see if they've got any information there. But it really is using a huge range of sources. And that's what Heriot Watt and partly my team spends its time doing, trying to pull together this very disparate range of sources into a data set which hopefully people use and enjoy and get a lot of value from.
Great. So quite a variety of sources, and the source of first level are national statistical services, but also you complement, because first of all they can be late. All national statistical services are very accurate or reporting, and if I'm not mistaken, even in JODI you sometimes get information on oil production of OPEC members late than normally they promise to supply.
That's absolutely right, and actually sometimes it just doesn't make sense. we could get returns, you know, we can send off a form and we get returns, and then it's not internally consistent, and therefore you have to make some decisions, some judgment about what is the correct number.
This year statistical review impressed me as all previous ones, but I liked especially its title, Two Steps Forward, One Step Back. It shows that the evolution of energy use and production is not linear, and reflecting more economic and market realities than policy intentions, even if they are announced at the highest level, are taking place. So what are the main characteristics of step back, in other words, one step back, and what are the promising signs of two step forward, which you describe in your this year's review?
Yeah. So if I start with the two steps forward, I mean, I think the world is on a journey. I think there is acknowledgement almost everywhere that the energy transition is happening. I think there's a commitment globally to tackle carbon and carbon emissions. And we are seeing incredible progress in terms of technology, in terms of policy, in terms of social preferences, which is changing sort of how we use and how we deliver energy. And that is ongoing, and we've seen it over the past 10 years, and we expect to see it continue over the coming decades. So that is ongoing. In terms of the step back, it's just these trends can't be linear. And there are cycles. So you have this structural trend, which is this energy transition, which we're seeing. But there are sort of linear, there are cycles within that. And just a couple of things that I think it's worth pulling out. One is that we've, over the past few years, we've had quite weak sort of global GDP growth or economic growth, which has been actually sort of quite light from the industrial or from the trade point of view. Last year, we saw quite a sharp rebound just in terms of GDP growth, but also in terms of industrial growth or manufacturing growth or trade growth, which is more energy intensive. And so with that comes sort of increasing energy use, it comes increasing emissions, you know, and that you could look at as a step back. But it's just really an unwinding of a short-term cycle, which we've seen, which was relatively weak growth over the past few years. Another example would be coal consumption. We've seen coal consumption fall over the last 3 years in China, and actually, just given its stage of economic development, that couldn't continue indefinitely. So actually, last year we saw coal growing in China for the first time in 3 years. And so, sort of just looking at the very surface of it, you could say it's a step back, but that doesn't mean that China isn't going to continue along this path of steady transition, of decarbonizing its energy system, of removing coal from its energy system. It was just last year we just saw a cyclical rebound, and that's all it was.
It is interesting also to observe the comment of Spencer Dale when he was presenting last week your review about situation with power, which is basically a main source of electricity and heat, where he said that during last 20 years there was no big change in the structure of primary energy sources which were used to in power sector. And we know that now the energy sector, which used to fuel first and second industrial revolution, first were trains and second was cars, but now we are speaking about electrification because we are living in the internet world, and we are all interconnected, big data and all that needs electricity. And still that electrification, while it is happening, is not taking place with expected share of renewables. It is still based on fossil fuels. Am I right?
Yeah, I think I would say you're partly right. So just to start with the power sector matters. It's exceptionally important. It's 40% of primary energy, global primary energy. It emits about a third of global emissions. So the power sector is exceptionally important. And if we're going to crack this energy transition, the power sector is one of the first places that we need to do it. So the thing that jumped out of us with this new data set, so we've actually, this year we've released new data, which is fuels into the power sector. And what did jump out immediately was that the coal share of power has been unchanged over the last 20 years. So in 20 years ago, coal made up 38% of power sector generation. Today, coal makes up 38% of power sector generation. So on first blush, it just looks like there has been no progress. But sort of beneath that, you see some interesting trends. You see sort of incredible growth in renewables, and you see renewables. And when we talk about renewables, we mean wind, solar, geothermal, and we exclude hydro because it's sort of an older renewable. But some of the newer renewables, and its share has increased sort of very dramatically over the last 20 years, and it's about 8% of power sector demand now. But at the same time, over the same period, we've seen this big offsetting sort of reduction in nuclear power. Obviously Fukushima happened, and then we've seen sort of a gradual denuclearization in Europe. And those two forces have offset each other to the point that now the share of fossil fuels in the non-fossil fuels in the power sector is almost identical today as it was 20 years ago. So there hasn't been that progress that we were hoping for, but the mix within it has changed slightly.
But the encouraging side is that renewables' role increased.
Absolutely. I mean, we do. So there is a challenge. So the world, parts of the world does continue to want to denuclearize, especially in Europe and parts of developed Asia. But the offsetting factor of that is, yeah, we are seeing incredible growth in renewables. So we saw record growth in solar power, solar PV and wind last year. And we expect that to continue. So I don't expect the non-fossil shares to change dramatically, but I think it could really be helped along, particularly with public policy. I think there are certain quite simple things we can do around carbon pricing in the power sector, which can have very quick and immediate and significant impacts.
I have another question. Let's look at the world economy, which is growing. And at the same time, we have a worrying signs of protectionism, if not trade conflicts. How do you perceive what would be this mix of still high growth but impeded by protectionism? Would it decrease demand for energy and maybe introduce some changes in your next year outlook?
Yeah, so I think first order, this is a macroeconomic question. This isn't an energy question. I think whether these issues around trade are going to have an impact on the global macroeconomy. I don't think I'm best placed to comment. What I've read is that actually, relatively at the moment, it could be fairly small in terms of what the US and Chinese are proposing to put tariffs on. But if it starts to escalate, it could get more serious. But so I think energy is second order. And firstly, it's how much of an impact is it going to have on global growth? And therefore, what's the impact is it going to have on energy? So I don't think I'm particularly well placed to answer that.
Yes. So it depends, of course, to the level of world economic activity as a function of it. It will affect energy consumption and demand for energy sources, of course.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So basically, if you produced your last outlook in February.
Yes.
And then are you looking into the changes within the period of less than 1 year, say in 6 months' time, or you wait until you would produce your next year outlook?
So we are continuously monitoring energy mm-hmm. trends throughout the year. So we have a day job, and our day job is to inform our senior management about what is going on within the energy world. And as part of that, we think about how's that going to affect long-term energy trends. So we're doing it every day. This is our day job. Towards sort of before Christmas in October, sort of a couple of months before Christmas, we'll start putting together our views for the next energy outlook. So our longer-term views for the next energy outlook, and there we'll sort of assimilate everything we've learned throughout the year. We'll discuss what trends have changed, what technologies have changed, what policies have changed, and we'll put it all together and we'll come up with our new view. I mean, ideally, if we were right the year before, these things shouldn't change too much, and it's just a question of how much we need to focus on any particular area. So we might choose to do a deep dive on a certain area, but there are times when we have seen significant changes. I think We've been taken by surprise at the rate of pace of renewable cost declines over the past few years, and therefore we've had to update our cost curves, and therefore we've had to update our view on renewables penetration, you know, and that's just us continuously updating sort of our views throughout the year and, until we then publish sort of in February next year.
I know that BP review is very respected, but at the same time, it is two reviews. In fact, it is the one of the views of industry representatives. But we are living in a wider world where there are many stakeholders, and there are some of them which are criticizing energy sector, and they blame maybe you for being biased towards energy higher energy consumption, being more quote-unquote optimistic about the use of energy in future, while they, for example, want to see fossil fuels not used in future due to the climate change challenges. And so the question is, are you looking on the trends objectively, as if you have no interest in your analysis, to show what you see to the best of your knowledge is happening without bias towards your commercial interests, and thus reflecting also the concerns of other stakeholders who are interested on environmental issues in the first place?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I a couple of points on that. I think the first point, it's an important point, is that we don't create a single projection. We don't have a deterministic forecast. I think the one thing I am certain about, that everything we say in our energy outlook is going to be wrong. You know, it's something, forecasting something as complex as global energy for any period of time, you're not going to get it right, and we know we're not going to get it right. So we don't have a single deterministic forecast. We have a range of scenarios, and so to be accused of sort of bias because we're presenting a sort of high energy dependent or oil dependent projection, it isn't right, because we have a range of scenarios. Some have more oil or energy or gas than others, but it's a range of scenarios. I mean, that's the first point. I mean, I think the second point is, it's impossible to eliminate bias. You know, I think we are human beings, we're not robots, so every decision we make, every piece of analysis will have some sort of bias sort of built in. We can't help that, but what we can do is we can try and speak to as many people as we possibly can. We can go out, speak to different stakeholders, people representing different parts of the energy industry, to try and understand their views, and we try and assimilate this. What I can assure you is that in no way do we try and present something that is going to paint BP or the energy world in a good light. We take these views and we assimilate them, and we present an objective, as far as we can, view of how these scenarios are going to play out. And in some ways we may not present a piece of information or an analysis because we think it is sort of talking up our book in so to speak. You know, in some ways, I mean, an energy company would obviously say that, wouldn't they? So we actually might withhold information because we think it is sort of too positive from a sort of an energy company perspective. But we don't have any interference from senior management about trying to push a particular objective or particular angle. We're completely independent from that point of view. But if we haven't got any bias, I can't say that. I think we all have biases. You know, what can we do?
Let's conclude. In conclusion, I would even express my view, and that will also contain some questions. So, as I said, BP Statistical Review and Outlook, as other outlooks, are very important sources for stakeholders to inform themselves and then decide what should be their further steps given the overall concerns about the CO2 emissions and climate change. And I think energy industry, and in particular your group, is very well aware of those challenges. But at the same time, knowing the details of the production, its history and its all elements, you are well placed to inform public about what is actually happening in all sectors of energy and how then policymakers, civil society and other stakeholders should react to see how the reality is going to meet their desiderata and the political intentions, for example, the intentions of Paris Accord, which in fact is today in a disarray because of the position of the United States towards this agreement. But to my mind, this continuous exercise of statistical review maybe was one of the biggest successes of British Petroleum as a company. And I believe it should be continued and it should create a debate, discussion, which we will have this evening at Webster. And it should be done on a regular basis. Would you agree with such conclusion?
Absolutely. I mean, it's very kind of you to say that. I mean, we hope it's useful to people in the industry, to people outside the industry. And I'm glad you find it useful, Ruben. Thank you very much. Just in terms of sort of the conclusions, we are very clear in our outlook in that we have a scenario called the Evolving Transition Scenario, which says if policies and technologies continue as we have seen in the recent past, we aren't going to meet the Paris climate goals. We're miles away. And I think we have been sort of lobbying quite hard for many years now that we think the world needs to have a meaningful carbon price, a global meaningful carbon price that will allow producers and consumers to allocate resources with the cost of carbon in mind and understanding what it's doing to the planet. And without that, you know, we think it's going to be very difficult to meet these targets. And so part of what we do in the Energy Outlook is to present that story, present that information, and let policymakers and society as a whole sort of make a decision about what it's going to do with that information. And we hope that, you know, that that's a key, an important part of what the Energy Outlook does.
Dear William, thank you very much for this very interesting conversation and answering to my questions and adding to my conclusions, especially on this CO2 emission pricing topic, which is, I believe, is extremely also important. Thank you very much, and let us prepare ourselves to our event.
Great. Thank you, Ruben.
Thank you.